Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm, I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil is over yonder. Not yonder, Alonso. It's just, I don't know, I don't want to. Feels like the A's are missing an opportunity, that's all.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you guys. That's my take.
Right, that's where we're at. Right,
I have not been to, I've been to a couple of River Cats games this year. I haven't gotten out to an A's game. And the major reason for that is because of everything that you just laid out. I mean, it's just, I'm not encouraged at all.
Yeah.
It's plain and simple.
If you're just trying to go to the ballpark with the homies, you're going to go to a River Cats game.
Exactly.
And you're going to sit right behind home plate for however much, and you're going to eat a bunch of hot dogs.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That sounded very specific, actually.
Yeah.
I did that this
the
year.
The Joe Bros.
The Glizzy King.
I mean, realistically, I think that's
I'd take down three glizzy.
One of the biggest issues, right? It's that, like, on a Tuesday night, you can go catch a River Cats game for $25 and all of these other benefits. Like, sure. And then the next day, you could go to an A's game, but pay twice as much for the ticket, twice as much for all the concessions. Like, everything's just more expensive.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I mean, if you're judging, and like, look, if there's baseball 7 days a week at the park,
right,
it's not a novelty.
Right.
It's just business.
And for again, I have other stuff we're going to talk about, I promise.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, for most casual fans, because there are baseball fans listening to this right now who are like, it's not the same. Major League and AAA are very different levels of baseball. I totally got it.
Of course.
But for the very average fan, the difference between the River Cats against the Salt Lake Bees?
Yeah,
is that right?
The Reno Aces.
The River Cats against the Reno Aces. Or the A's versus the Rays, there's no distinction there in terms of personnel, in terms of quality. It's just a baseball game.
So anyways, still the same park.
Yeah.
Same park.
When the A's are really good next year, I think the A's are going to be awesome next year. When the A's are really good next year, I think we'll see this change.
Okay.
When there's a very clear, like, hey, there's going to be playoff baseball here. Oh. There's a playoff baseball team. That's, I think, going to change the vibe. For sure. It doesn't help that they're not very good.
Are you kidding me? I mean, yeah, if people
know... You're already fired up.
I'm literally excited thinking about this right now. I mean, if people know that meaningful baseball is going to get played and we're going into the playoffs and you get to bring the rally towels out and whatnot, the stadium's going to be packed. Like, there's no doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah.
So
I'm right there with you, man. Last baseball thing before we move on to an NFL preseason pet peeve of mine. Bob Melvin's got to go, man.
I love Bo Mel.
I told
too.
Charlie this. That's why, you know.
But James, what you just said?
Yeah.
When I said Bob Melvin's got to go, and you go, I love Bo Mel. That's why Bob Melvin's still around.
Yeah.
Because people just like the guy.
He's a good dude.
He's a great dude.
Yeah.
I don't know a single person who's ever had a negative interaction with Bob Melvin. Just really kind. Really gracious, especially like with media. Very good with his time. Really good at talking.
Yep.
But the Giants are 1-12 in their last 13 home games. They're back under 500, and Bob Melvin consistently doesn't have any answers. They've spent money. It's not like they have a bottom five. I think they're top 10 payroll in baseball.
Mm.
I think he's the opposite. It's like Mark Jackson.
Yeah.
But Bob Melvin's the spiritual opposite of this, because Mark Jackson had a ton of success with the Golden State Warriors. He took a team that was one of the NBA laughingstocks and helped put them on this trajectory to where they are now.
They had one playoff appearance in 19 years.
Yes. The We Believe team was it.
Yep.
And that was 06, 07. So that was their success. And then Mark Jackson steps in. And Mark Jackson gets them to the second round in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
They get eliminated in the first round in seven games against the Clippers in 2014. And then he gets fired. He has not gotten a job since. The reason he's not gotten a job since is because he is a tough dude to deal with.
Very difficult to deal with.
There are numerous stories about the issues that Mark Jackson had behind the scenes as the Warriors head coach. And that's why he has not gotten another coaching job.
Yep.
Bob Melvin's the opposite. Bob Melvin's had success. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Bob Melvin is necessarily this, I don't think he's a bad manager per se. But the reason he gets this kind of leash is because, like having him around.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Like, he's, I'm sorry, man. It's just not, that's not a good baseball team. The manager is not doing anything to, and I don't even buy the whole, he needs to show more fire. I saw our sister station, 95.7 The Game, talking about how, do you need to see more fire and passion from Bob Melvin? No, because that's fake.
Yeah.
You know it as well as anybody. When players spot fakeness in a coach or a manager, they're done with that person.
Game over.
It's done.
You lose the locker room, you got to go.
Immediately.
Yep.
And so if Bob Melvin started ranting and raving and being, that's not him. Players would be like, who's this guy? But it's just, it's really clear to me that whatever is happening there with the Giants, he's not going to be the guy that leads them back to where they need to go. I know they exercised his option at the beginning of this year, so he's with the team through 2026. You got to cut bait.
Yeah.
You got to do it now.
And that's really tough, too, because, again, like, I don't think people say Bob Melvin is a mediocre manager. That's what John Poole says in the chat. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, he led some really low payroll A's teams to high, you know, to deep,
mm-hmm.
you know, into the playoffs. So, like, I don't know. For whatever reason, it just, like, the passion for that situation, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like anyone has it.
Mm-mm.
Like, the players are not ready to go out and play every day, mm-hmm. and there's no way he's not being able to turn the tide.
Nope.
Like, at some point, you do have to make changes, and that sucks because, again, I think he's a really good dude. I've actually sat in and, you know, covered mm-hmm. the A's for games and mm-hmm. actually spoken to him. Like, I just think he's a really cool connector guy.
Yep.
But if you're not connecting with your team and your team's not showing any fight at all,
right,
it's probably time to go.
That it's been the same problem, that he's been giving the same answers in press conferences.
Yeah.
We just got to play harder. We just got to fight. Like, brother, that is on you.
Well,
that is your job.
I felt the same exact way when the A's lost, what was it, 21 out of 23 or whatever,
yeah.
with Kotze. It's like, hey, man, you better have an answer.
Yep.
Like, I get it. You know, your team has holes. There are holes in your roster and your lineup. But you can't just go out there and like look like little league outfielders half the time.
Yep.
Look like little league players.
Yep.
Making remedial mistakes. Like, focus
not
players.
Not acceptable.
Yeah, yeah. The lack of like overall quality control when it starts to slip like that.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, everybody, like, let's rein it in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we need to do to get the third baseman and left fielder on the same page? So, like, two balls a game don't land in the outfield, that have no business landing in the outfield.
Is giving away outs.
Yeah, that any softball player in Sacramento would run down an outfield, would run down and catch a ball. I mean, yeah. How many times have we seen, it's not like a week and a half ago, where Kurtz and Langoliers hit each other, like slammed into each other.
Yeah.
To be honest, Kurtz hasn't hit a home run since.
Well.
So, yeah. Crazy.
Didn't he hit one a couple nights ago?
I don't think so. He's been sitting on 23 for a while.
Oof.
Yeah.
Maybe Langoliers hit one the other night.
Langoliers hits one every night. Right now, I mean, Langoliers
12 in the last 28 days.
Fire.
That's ridiculous. Who hit one last night?
Soderstrom?
No, nobody hit one last night.
Oh, that's unusual.
Soderstrom hit one a couple nights ago.
Yeah, Soderstrom saw. He's up to 24 jacks.
Golly. You know, multiple guys with 30.
They should have. Well, I mean, we're running out of games, but yeah. Yeah, they have an opportunity to have four guys with 30.
What, they had 122, so they got 40 games left?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Rooker's played in every game. Interesting.
Good for him.
I mean, of course, he's a DH, but yeah.
Langelier's 24, Kurtz 23, Soderstrom 22, Rooker 24.
Yeah.
Golly, man.
Lots of pop.
Lots of pop. All right, let's shift gears. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Joe Brazil behind the glass. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. I have a pet peeve from NFL preseason that I have to get off my chest.
Uh-oh.
And our boss did it today. He did the pet peeve.
Oh, no.
I need everybody. And I understand, as somebody who mines for content constantly during football season. Well, and after football season, during the offseason. But we have to stop putting stock into preseason depth charts.
Yeah.
For example, you can go to NinersWire.com and you can find me writing about the depth chart they released. But it's couched in, the communication staff makes up this depth chart. And so the way I choose to view it when I write about it is, all right, let's pretend this is real.
Mm-hmm.
What if, or do we see any movement? Does the comm staff decide to move somebody if they pull? Like, that's the crux of it. The meltdown from the internet, and Adam Schefter perpetuated it. This is the thing that sucks. Adam Schefter knows better. But because he has to engagement farm on Twitter, because apparently he needs Elon bucks to go along with his massive salary, he tweets out that on the Browns' second depth chart of the summer, Shedeur Sanders is listed as the number 4 quarterback. I can't tell you how much that doesn't matter. I can't describe. I don't have the vocabulary to put into words how much it doesn't matter that Shedeur Sanders was listed 4th on the Browns' second depth chart of the offseason. Do you want to know why? Because the equivalent of our guy Michael with the Kings, who, and our guy Nick, who sends out the pregame emails of like, hey, here's what to know.
Yeah, the game book.
They're the ones who build these depth charts.
Yeah.
They're watching practice and going, eh. They probably honestly throw one together and then never look at it again.
We get a game book every single game, and it has a starting lineup, a projected starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
It is wrong all the time. And it's not that they're wrong. They're just putting the projected starting lineup.
Right.
What we talk about when we do the Purple and Black pregame show.
Yep.
We talk about who's going to start tonight.
It might change.
Yeah, it might
change.
Somebody
rolls an ankle in pregame. All right, they're not starting now.
Yeah.
I saw so much reaction to this because Shedeur Sanders looked solid in his preseason debut.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is, again, I don't know for sure. My guess is that depth chart gets made and they go, great, that box is checked. We're not looking at this again. They don't go through and assess. The comm staff has a million things going on. They're not going to go through and watch a preseason game and go, God, we should probably move Shedeur up to number 2 or 3. They're just not going to do that. They're not. If you have a thing at work that your boss says, hey, can you make this graphic for us and print it out and put it on the wall? It doesn't matter. We just need it up there because it's a requirement from corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And something changes. Maybe it's a seating chart and somebody moves desks. You're not going to go take that down, recreate it, move the thing. If your boss tells you, it doesn't matter. So I cannot emphasize enough, if you see depth chart content in the preseason, take it with grains of salt, a lime, and a shot of tequila.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter.
Yep.
That is not the coaches. That is not anybody telling them how to do it. That is the concept, because the coaches have their own little internal depth chart.
Yeah, and how does the 4th quarterback start your first preseason game?
Right.
They're not looking at that. They don't care.
They couldn't care less.
What they're not going to do is feed into it and say, hey, tell your guy to move him up to number 3.
Yeah.
Move him up to, no. Let's start a little fire here.
He was 4th on the first depth chart. He was 4th on the second one. My guess, because unless they make a transaction where like, okay, this guy's not on the team anymore, we got to plug this guy in. Okay. But they didn't make any quarterback transactions. So they just kept it the same.
Mm-hmm.
What matters is the final roster. The depth chart that the comm staff puts out has no bearing on any of that. Relax. Yahoo Sports. The Browns have listed Shedeur Sanders as the number four quarterback. Are they making the right move? What? Can you imagine? Kyle Madsen says Maxime Reynaud should be the number two center. Are the Kings making the right move? That's the equivalent.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent.
Except for you don't even work for the team.
Right. Kyle Madsen says that Keon Ellis should start over Zach LaVine. Is that the right move? No, man, I'm just some guy. Comm staff, just some guy or some girl.
Yeah.
Making a list. Anyways, that's James. I'm Kyle. That's Joe. We had a couple of conversations yesterday that had this question clanging around in my head about pressure on various sports luminaries in this area. So we'll dive into that next on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. It's ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Huh. I like this. We have Aftershock tickets that you can win. Oh. I know that.
Maybe I said it wrong. That.
We have a couple of four-day general admission passes to Aftershock at Discovery Park Thursday, October 2nd through October 5th to give away. For a chance to win, enter on the ESPN1320.com contest page. Passes courtesy of Danny Wimmer Presents.
There we go.
That's a nice old ticket to have.
That's a very expensive ticket to have, a four-day pass to Aftershock.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the way this is written on our sheet is two times per shift. So if I pull up at 8 o'clock,
just yell it.
I just yell this out in the lobby. That counts?
I think it does. Per shift? I think it does.
All right, very good.
We can pull it from the cameras.
I believe it's like when you declare bankruptcy. I declare bankruptcy.
Thank you, Danny Wimmer. Oh, yeah.
There it is. We also,
two times per shift, we did it.
On Saturday, August 16th, from 12:30, we have the Raiders and 49ers.
Coverage begins 12:30. Kickoff 1 o'clock.
Preseason game.
Yeah, get fired up.
Yeah.
The Niners and Raiders are doing a joint practice on Thursday, which leads me to believe the 49ers aren't going to play their starters again.
Mm.
Although they might have to because they don't have any healthy players. When Jacob Cowing coming back is like this huge deal.
Yeah.
Yesterday, you should have seen photos, videos, Jacob Cowing warming up. Jacob Cowing had one catch last year. What are we doing? That's right. He had more than one catch. That's not fair.
He had six.
But Jacob Cowing was like on the bubble for me going into camp. It's like, yeah, he might make the team.
Yeah.
What did he play? 15 games, 4 catches, 6 targets for 80 yards last year and a rush for 7 yards. That's the guy that people are like, oh, he's back. Man, they're in bad shape right now. The pressure scale. So we talked about this with Brock Purdy yesterday and how much pressure there is on him if the 49ers are super banged up. How much pressure is there on him to carry the team over the hump? Per shift. No, Charlie. No, you said two times per shift. Oh, between 10 and noon. Okay, very good. Charlie has clarified. It says per shift. It says it right here.
Per shift.
Per shift, Charlie.
How long have you been to radio?
Ooh. August 17th, 2011 was my first day.
If someone refers to a shift, are they referring to your shift coming to work or are they referring to your air shift?
Well, Charlie, if you want to hash this out right now, given the amount of different jobs I do for this station,
Your shift is all over. My
shift is all over, but yeah.
Once again, are we referring to your shift or your air shift? And if you get this wrong, you could be unemployed.
That's why we did it twice during the show. I'm not actually just going to go yell it out in the lobby. As much as we love Danny
Ladies
Wimmer,
and gentlemen, see what I deal with. See why I yell medulla oblongata every day.
There it is.
It's Charlie, everybody. Oh, no, that's not what we wanted. There we go. There's the right noises. Yeah, two times per show. Thanks, Charlie. Oh, I'm going to get into that on air. Call me out like that. Damn.
This happened, Kyle.
But we're talking about Brock Purdy and the pressure on him. If the 49ers are super banged up going into this year, our guy TC keeps the pressure on Kyle Shanahan.
Of course.
And how much pressure is there on him to finally get this team over the hump and win a Super Bowl? And then we got into, during the handoff, we got into pressure on Domantas Sabonis. And so I just started connecting some dots and started pulling up some names of people who there might be some pressure on. And so it's a 0 to 10 scale. 0 is like, yeah, there's no pressure on this person.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I would say Drew Eubanks. The pressure is 0 on Drew Eubanks. Dude's just here to vibe. If he doesn't play well, nah. If he does play well, bonus. Right?
Yeah.
10 is like, if you think, 10 is like, if the 49ers start 0-2, Kyle Shanahan's out of here.
Mm.
Like, it is that type of, so that's, 10 is maximum amount, 0 is minimum amount. And let's start with Brock Purdy. How much pressure do you think is on Brock Purdy on a scale of 0 to 10? And feel free to participate in the Chatty House or on the Elk Grove Kid Talk line at 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320.
I'm going to put him at an 8.
Oh, my. Okay.
Because I do think that he did get the big contract.
Yep.
But I also think he's been left pretty exposed here by his front office with just a slap-together wide receiver core that doesn't have, I mean, again. Like,
can we call it patchwork?
Patchwork, yeah. Yeah, it's the patchwork is coming apart at the seams. Like your number one wide receiver, who was your number three wide receiver, but now is number one, has a calf injury. Your number four wide receiver from last year is now you're probably number one wide receiver, Ricky Pearsall.
Mm-hmm.
You got a guy who can, you know, who is a rotational wide receiver, who is probably getting suspended for a couple of games.
Yep.
You got a second year wide receiver who just came back. You got a rookie wide receiver who looked great and then has a high ankle sprain. Like, it's one hit after another, and it's like, mm-hmm. Hey, Brock, we need you to go out there and perform regardless of who you're throwing to.
Yeah.
And that's just not a reality. You know, especially when, hey, they didn't put any money into the wide receiving core, and they didn't put any money into the offensive line at all.
Okay, so here's where I think there's a disconnect. Because the way, I don't think their offensive line is so bad.
Yeah.
That it's like, he's not going to be able to play behind that offensive line. Like, the offensive line is fine. It's very average.
Average.
It has a couple of weak spots, but I don't, their offensive line or their inaction there, for me, has more to do with the future than it does this year. If Brock Purdy is holding on to the ball too long, like he did last year,
mm-hmm.
and is taking sacks and having to throw the ball away and is having to scramble because of it, I'm not putting that on the offensive front. I'm putting that on Brock Purdy.
Well, you can put that on Brock Purdy, but you can also, like, I think part of the reason why he was holding on to the ball was because Christian McCaffrey wasn't there and he had no check down.
Okay, and that, I guess, gets to the other point, is they paid him to be the guy. Christian McCaffrey not being there can't be an excuse anymore. It just can't. And if it is, then you shouldn't have paid him as much as you paid him. Because if the requirement is, well, you have to have Christian McCaffrey, you have to have an offensive player that you're running back, you have to have an all-pro tight end, you have to have an all-pro receiver, you have to have multiple all-pros on the offensive line or multiple Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. Like, at some point, it's like, oh, maybe the quarterback's not very good.
No, I mean, I get that. I get that. But you have to at least have basics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't be running, again, how many catches did Cowan have last year?
4.
Okay, and, like, it's a big deal. He made it back to camp. He had 4 catches last
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And you need him to play as a number three wide receiver this season, right now, a guy who had four catches last year.
Maybe even number two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. And I'm not going to put that on Brock Purdy. Like, it's Brock Purdy's job to try to put these guys in positions to succeed, to not throw hospital balls, to put the ball down the sidelines where you need to put it, to to find Kittle and to find McCaffrey to buoy, you know, your offense until those other guys figure out how to play football.
Right.
So, I mean, when you're looking at a group of wide receivers that it doesn't matter if you waive them or pick them up 3 days later, they're still going to be available. Those aren't real options. Those are just players that you should have for camp. But I think we all see a pathway where those guys are going to have to play snaps. And that's, again, that's on, it's on injuries, but it's also on management for designing something that right now looks pretty flawed.
So the, you say it's an 8 for Brock Purdy. I think that's actually probably a good number.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a 7.
I think if you have Ricky Pearsall, a first-round pick, if you have George Kittle, and you have Christian McCaffrey, and you have Trent Williams playing left tackle, I do not think there's any excuse for Brock to be indecisive, to be throwing baffling interceptions, to be dropping the football randomly like he did against the Vikings.
Yeah.
Like, it, at some point, you have to raise your floor to a certain level. And if that's their receiving core all year, if they're pining for DeMarcus Robinson to come back,
yeah,
then we can assess as we go. But going into the year, even with Juwan Jennings dealing with a calf injury, even with DeMarcus Robinson potentially facing a suspension, even with Jordan Watkins out for a month, I think there's enough that Brock Purdy should still be a really effective player. And if he's not, if Christian McCaffrey's there and Ricky Pearsall's there and George Kittle's there and Trent Williams is playing and they're still really fighting uphill offensively.
Yeah.
Now I start to wonder, like, hey, man, what do you need?
Yeah, if he's going to put up like 3,200 to 3,500 yards and throw 23 touchdowns, then there's a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is. Sure. But, I mean, statistically speaking, like we talked about this yesterday, like, Patrick Mahomes statistically was not good at all last year, and it was because the few wide receivers he was able to create, one of them tore his ACL.
Well, Mahomes tore his ACL.
Well, Mahomes accidentally hit the guy and blew out his knee. But, I mean, like, you didn't have any wide receivers outside of Kelsey, who Kelsey showed age.
Yeah.
There's no question. So, yeah, it's tough, man. I think that Purdy is in a situation where, hey, like, look, you have to perform. But at the same time, if he's not like a 4,500-yard, 35-touchdown guy, I'm looking at the wide receiver core and saying, okay, were they part of the problem?
Sure. And I guess for me, and then we can move on because I feel like I'm talking in circles, sorry. But I guess for me, what you're saying there is, okay, maybe he doesn't get to 4,500 yards and 37 touchdowns because the receiving core was makeshift all year.
Uh-huh.
But can you avoid the mistakes? Can you still find McCaffrey and Kittle and make the best of your receiving core? Okay, so maybe your numbers aren't big, but can you continue to function within the offense?
Yeah.
Can you not take a step back as a player?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I'll be watching for. What, and it sounds like Kyle Shanahan, that number is going to be higher for you.
Shanahan, I have him probably 7-8 again.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I have him up there, it's not even higher, because I think at this point, you know, you have these losing seasons, these big downswings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's running out there with a bunch of rookies, and if they don't work out, like, this team is going to get exposed.
Mm-hmm.
If his receiving core doesn't work out, his quarterback is going to get exposed, and by that, he's also, as like one of the quarterback whisperers in the NFL, going to get exposed.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think, like, Lynch, I'm going to put him in the same boat, because those guys are so tied together.
Shanahan's running the show.
Yeah. Well, if he's running the show, he probably should have got better wide receivers.
So that's it. To me, it is right up there. He and Purdy are now tied together.
Yeah.
And all of these problems come back on him. Mm-hmm. If the defensive linemen they draft are not effective players, that's on the coach. And it's not, it's that's not the case for every team, but in the 49ers organizational hierarchy, it's on the coach.
Yeah.
If they can't figure out a receiving core, or if Ricky Pearsall's not awesome, or if they don't have a functional running back behind Christian McCaffrey after trading away Jordan Mason this offseason,
mm-hmm.
if you're not able to find a functional running back in the event that McCaffrey's not on the field, that's on the coach.
Oh, okay.
If Jake Brendel, their center, takes a step back, if Colton McKivitz takes a step back at right tackle, if they can't find a quality starting left guard, that's on the coach. So I am not in the fire Kyle Shanahan camp, but we are very much in the stages of, all right, this is all on him now.
Yeah.
They've cleared the decks. They've gotten rid of the veterans. They've brought in some new young talent. Can you open a second Super Bowl window? And you're going to have a couple of year runway to do that. But we're going to learn really quickly here in 2025 if the 2024 class draft class is going to be worth a damn, if the 2025 draft class is going to be worth a damn, and if they're not, I have a hard time believing Kyle Shanahan is going to be the head coach for much longer.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, they put themselves in a situation where it's coming mm-hmm. to a head, yeah. and you have to show that there is the bounce back,
mm-hmm.
that we're going to see the bounce back, especially right. with a weak schedule.
Yeah, you've taken the team in 2017 was so bad.
Yeah.
I don't want people to lose sight of how awful that team in 2017 was. And then in 2018, Jimmy Garoppolo tears his ACL, but then the next year they're in the Super Bowl and they had this really high peak. And now they're valleying.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get a ton of chances to open Super Bowl windows. So that's just kind of the reality of it. Let's stick with head coaches, but let's get here to Sacramento. Is there any pressure on Doug Christie this year?
I mean, there's pressure to not have your team look completely, like, unprepared.
Right. I have a number in my head.
Okay.
4.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Yeah.
That's probably fair. I would say that the Mike Woodson addition might crank it up to, like, a 5.
Okay.
Like, if this thing is completely off the rails from the jump, I think everyone's going to be looking around like, okay, what is happening here and how do we get this thing back going the right way?
Yeah.
But I kind of look at it in the same way that I look at Brock Purdy. Like, what is Doug Christie supposed to do when he doesn't have enough shooters? When he wants to run a system? Like, yeah, he has to adjust his system if he doesn't have any shooters.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're going counter to, like, all NBA, like, standards yeah. at this point. So I think that there is going to be, like, are you connecting? Are you pushing the right buttons? Do you have a team that's finding success? If this team wins 25 games, this is not going to go well for anybody.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I was going to say that I'm judging Doug Christie less on wins and losses this year,
mm-hmm.
but to a point, 25 wins is not acceptable. That's not an acceptable number.
Yeah, I mean, I would even say, like, 33 wins is probably acceptable.
Yeah, that's right. If they win 33 or 35 games, but, and again, that's not in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
If they win 33 games and there's all sorts of drama and there's turmoil and Keon Ellis doesn't want to play anymore and it's just kind of a mess on a nightly basis and Nate Clifford's playing and then he's not and it's just, that's different. We can assess that then. But if they win 33 and they're playing hard every night, and Nate Clifford's playing a lot and looks great,
mm-hmm.
and Keegan Murray, it looks more like he's back on an upward trajectory. All right, then you can kind of, you feel like, all right, Doug's establishing himself as a coach, and he had a couple of things go wrong. I'm very much judging off of those things first, though.
Yeah, I'm also like, if this team is on pace to win 38 games, but you can see that the play-in tournament is more like 44 games,
mm-hmm.
and so 20 games left in the season, you pull the plug, and it's Isaac Jones, it's Nate Clifford, it's Keegan Murray, it's Keon Ellis, it's Devin Carter playing the bulk, mm-hmm. you know, Maxime Reno mm-hmm. playing the bulk of the minutes, that's when I step back and I go, okay, look, I'm gonna judge you off of this season that you probably should have had,
mm-hmm.
not on the season you're going to have because somebody's waving a white flag.
Yeah.
And I would understand waving the white flag because your goal should be to find top tier talent. And if you can't do that on the open market, you've got to get it through the draft.
Yep.
And so if you got to take a step back, that's fine with me.
Sure.
But it's got to be reasonable and doesn't have to be like the entire franchise is shaking the entire season.
Yeah.
That's going to be the problem.
The flip side of that, if the Kings win 44 games this year, that's the whatever the opposite of pressure is. Like that to me, I have a hard time believing the Kings get to that point and they got like dragged there.
Oh no. No, if they get to 44,
it's like oh my god, everything's going great. Look at Doug go.
Yeah, good work.
Yeah, that's kind of how.
And you're holding the line until you get closer to that 2027 when you can start making actual changes to the roster.
And again, that's not in a vacuum. I just have a hard time seeing a scenario where the Kings win 44 games and it's just kind of a nightmare to get there.
Yeah.
Like if they're playing hard, they're doing all the right things, then I think it might beget that number of wins. But we got the handoff coming up next. D'Lo and KC will be in here. We'll hang out with those guys. We'll talk more about I want to do this pressure scale stuff with them, but we'll also talk about the A's in Sacramento because I know Kenny's got some thoughts on that. We'll dive into it here on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. The handoff coming up next. It's ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I am shook off of this.
Time flies, bro.
Dude, Monet Davis being 24 years old is really messing me up.
That is crazy. What y'all know about this? Well, Kyle, you're actually still pretty young. I don't know if you'll know. You'll know. I don't know if Jesse and Joe know. What you know about Danny Almonte?
Oh, Danny Almonte, the GOAT.
Danny Almonte, that went
just
crazy.
27 years old out there throwing 98.
Striking these pieces. F them kids.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Did you see the like 30 for 30 short on Danny Almonte?
No.
It's actually kind of sad.
His story was rough.
That particular situation, he didn't know anything. Some people were like, hey, we want you to come play baseball for us. He's
right.
Like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
And he didn't know they were doing.
It's almost always the punk ass adult's fault. It's
facts.
Like, yeah, what's a kid going to do? Like, hey, I got it. I'm going to scheme up this plan.
Honestly,
stupid ass adults.
What was he, 16, 17?
He might have been. Nah, he wasn't that old.
He was drinking a beer before the game, wasn't he?
like what's his name? Kelly from Bad News Bears. Wasn't he drinking and smoking?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good knowledge by me. But
Danny Almonte currently 38.
Nobody will prop up Kenny more than Kenny.
Damn.
Now is that 38 for real or is he actually 42?
It's 38 for real.
Okay. He's 38 in Buddy Hield years.
I was gonna say he's still younger than Buddy.
I think he was
facts.
Facts.
He was he might have been like 15 when he
pitched. He was 14 years old 14. At the time of it. But I promise no 14-year-old is out here like, you know what I want to do? I want to get into the Little League World Series with 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
I'm going to get out there.
I'm scheme on these hoes.
Hey, throwing 79 from 50 feet away.
It's crazy. Against a 12-year-old.
You know, they do the major league equivalent where your reaction time is the equivalent to 90 whatever. It's like 120 miles an hour. Yeah, he threw a perfect game. You can't see
bringing
it.
The heat.
It's crazy.
Those are the two Little League World Series memories I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Is those two specific players. And then the other thing is for like the first 15 years of my existence, Chinese Taipei would destroy everyone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're
incredible.
Unbeatable.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Love the Little League World Series. It's my favorite event. I just get so fired up for it.
KC said he used to get a kick out of the kids crying.
He did. Yeah, that was kind of a tough.
That's wild.
When I was a kid, not as an adult.
I really rock with, do you remember a couple years ago? It's probably a few years ago. I say a couple years ago. It's probably several years ago now. When the kid gave up just that monster home run. Dude hit this nuke like over the hill and over the tree, just a bomb. And the kid on the mound is like laughing and high fives the guys. He's running around there like, that's the way to do it.
Man. Yeah.
Like, damn, you just got your pitch tattooed. Like, let's.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, let's just rock with it. Would you guys rather, do we want to do A's attendance first or second?
Well, we're here.
Birthday boy.
Okay.
Birthday boy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hey, Damian, happy birthday.
This call.
Thank you.
How about to say the drum roll?
That's my bad.
You would not be slept on no more, brother.
That's right.
Thank 22 you. Big ones today. Congratulations.
Who is that?
That's
I've been working at Odyssey longer than that.
That's a great point. That's Micah Parsons talking about Brock Purdy.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Run it again.
You would not be slept on no more, brother.
Oh, man.
Would not be slept on no more, brother.
He ended up hating on him like 6 months later when he was like, yeah, no more rookie contract, huh?
Yeah.
All right, bro. All right.
Where's your extension, Micah?
Micah, that's
dude. Brock.
Micah, hey. A funny dude, man.
You got a handshake deal with Jerry Jones. They're all set. Yeah, Micah's got his contract.
Thank you, Dallas.
Wild.
I don't think it works like that.
It definitely doesn't.
You're still on the team.
It definitely doesn't. Let's talk about the A's, and then we'll get to this
Dallas
precious
Dallas is iconic.
Oh, at the end of his, at the end of his,
so great,
really good.
Thank you, Dallas.
Really good.
All right, pal,
you're on the roster.
Yeah, I'm so interested to see how that plays out. Mm. Like he's gonna play, right?
I say it's gonna be like Bosa, the week of week one.
That's tough.
Just
that is tough.
Anytime you can have a player that good, what you want to do is torpedo the relationship.
That's a great strategy.
It's good ownership.
Jerry wants everybody to remember he's the big dog.
The Cowboys' issue is that Jerry Jones still thinks it's 1995.
That's 100% accurate.
And also, the other Cowboys' issue is that despite all of this, they're valued at $12.6 billion by the
Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not going to change what they're doing.
That's crazy that Micah said, no, this sounds good. I'm going to run it past my agent. Jerry said, no, deal's off. Huh?
No, because Jay-Z won't call me back, so I'm not talking to your agent.
Hey, can you imagine the deal Jerry had getting over on Michael Parsons? Like, oh, can you believe he's going to sign this?
Hey, I'm going to start using that as an excuse to not talk to people. Like, Jay-Z won't take my calls.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not talking to Complex. No.
That's okay. Complex is just going to text you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's fine. He's not
does he call, do the thing? Does Complex do the thing to you where he goes, or he's on the phone and you'll step in and go, oh, my bad. And then he goes, no, you're fine. What's up? While he's on the phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, I wanted to talk about the wide orbit. He goes, oh, okay, I'll call you later.
He texts me.
And then you never get the phone call?
He texts me, like, standing outside this studio with what was clearly an emergency. And he's texting it to me. I'm like, I looked at Casey. I was like, hey, Complex is asking if I got to go see what's going on. And I walk in, and he's just like, oh, yeah, can you go record this word because so-and-so didn't do it? I'm like, yeah. He was like, okay, it has to be in this hour. Mm-hmm. And I'm in my head, I'm thinking it has to be in the 12 o'clock hour because it's 11:44. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking it has to be in at 12. And I go in and I do the read and I realize, nope, he meant 11.
That's crazy.
This has to get recorded and loaded into the system when the next commercial break runs, which is 6 minutes away. So I had to record. It was a 25 second thing with very specific reads that you can't mess up.
Right.
But I couldn't load it into the system because I don't have access to the end. So I had to record it, send it to Complex, go to Complex and go, did you get it? And he just looks at me on his conference call and goes, oh, yeah, I got it. I'll load it into the system. We probably have 60 seconds to get this word loaded into the system before it makes Mark's life a living hell. And I'm just looking at him like, okay. And I walk away. And I asked him, like, at 6 whatever, I was like, hey, did everything go okay at 11? He goes, oh, yeah, it's fine. Got in the system.
You're doing
all right, man.
You think you're Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible and you're over here eating cornflakes.
Yeah, he's just on a conference call talking to God knows what state about God knows what playlist. And I'm like, all right, man, great.
I had to sit in there while some record executive or whatever they are, marketing people, played a Morgan Wallen track.
Oh.
That was not a good time.
Well,
it had Rick Ross and Lil Wayne on it.
He called me in. Yeah, I've heard that. He called me in one day after the KSFM show and was like, hey, there was a record rep there. He's like, I'm gonna play the new Rihanna. And he had a tone to his voice, and I'm like,
oh no.
I was like, You've heard this already. He goes, yeah. Like, okay. And he plays it, and it's that song from Smurfs, and it's the most god-awful piece of trash you've ever seen.
Horrible.
And so I'm like, okay. And I don't know who the record rep is, so I'm like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, oh, nothing. This is crap. I just wanted to play it for you. I'm like, oh, okay.
Good.
We're all in agreement. This song sucks. Terrific. Everybody have a great day.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he played that. He goes, you heard the new Rihanna? No, he goes, listen. I'm like, listening to it, I'm like.
So bad.
Like, hey, I don't know. Is this supposed to, I don't know if he's like a big Rihanna guy or what. I was just like, not my favorite piece of work by her for sure.
He wanted everyone's genuine reaction of disgust.
He goes, it says 13 words the whole song.
The whole song.
I bet that check was crazy.
Oh, for sure. Well, she was in the movie. So I'm sure it was part of the, hey, while you're here.
Yeah.
She said no. They said, well, here's an extra, you know, however many million. She goes, fine. Gosh, you're getting 13 words.
Here, just get this.
You're getting 13 words, put it on a loop, and I'm out.
Yeah. James, any complex stories you want to share?
I don't have a lot of complex stories.
James, have you met Complex?
I have.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys have talked about houses. That's right. Yeah. I've been out there. Kenny, your thoughts on the A's attendance?
Woo.
Thoughts?
You guys did a great job earlier today too. By the
Thank
way.
You. That's Speaking wow. That's big time. Thank you so much.
My concern issue with what's going on with the A's and their attendance here in Sacramento is much like my concern was with the A's in Oakland. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this, but I remember it vividly because it was the first time I really sat down and said, yo, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You filled in for a show that we were doing. This we were still at the house, and you filled in, and the A's played somebody,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what the announced crowd was.
Mm-hmm.
There had to be 250.
Yeah,
people.
there was somewhere. Even their low attendance number announced was like.
Yeah, and I said, in my head, I was like, yo, this is a bad look. Next day we had the show. I said, Kyle, man. I know you're an A's fan, Bay Area mm-hmm. guy. Like, what's going on with this? You mm-hmm. explained it. It all made sense. I understood it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, Kyle, this can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any chance of the A's staying in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
this cannot happen. And the reason was the reason. Like, I get the reason. But my argument with that and when they would not show up and they said, we don't want to support John Fisher and all this other stuff was, it's not about right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what can you do to keep this team here?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you would see John Fisher and what he was doing was clear as day. I'm going to run this franchise into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make it as least appealing as possible mm-hmm. to the fan base so they don't get here. Mm-hmm. And when I want to leave, I can say, look, they don't support.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got to go. I can't mm-hmm. make money here. It's not... We understand the context of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line was he had the numbers to go to whoever he needed to and say, look, I can't make it work here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my concern. My concern here in Sacramento, everything that you guys talked about with the reasons why
mm-hmm.
it's not a sellout every night is 100% spot on. But to me, I'm afraid the bottom line might be the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to appeal to Major League Baseball and say this is a viable market, which mm-hmm. we all know it is,
mm-hmm.
but like everything else, they're not diving into the context of everything. Mm-hmm. It's just going to look like, well, what were you able to do with the team here in your city? And if those numbers don't look right, I don't think so.
That was always the danger of getting in bed with this owner.
Yeah.
That was always the...
But I think my thing with him is I always thought he would have the wherewithal to kiss our ass for a couple of years.
That's it.
And that's all you had to do.
Yep.
Was just give people a reason to be at these games. Like, just embrace the city a little bit. They're trying to pretend like they're not here.
But John Fisher don't matter. Just like in Oakland, John Fisher didn't matter. What mattered was having Major League Baseball here and keeping it here.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point.
I think that had a shelf life. I think that's what we're witnessing. Shelf life of having baseball here, that's because I think there was a feeling like maybe this thing could be ours. Like, I think that was real.
How I'm looking at it is, if you're auditioning as a city for Major League Baseball, I don't care who the owner is. I don't care if he don't put Sacramento on the jerseys or anything else like that.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is the bottom line. Our best bet, it's not a guarantee, but our best bet is if we have 12,000 to 14,000 every night.
Mm-hmm.
That's our best bet. And I don't care if he's not kissing our ass or, you know, acquiescing to Sacramento, all this other stuff, because that doesn't matter. Do I want John Fisher to do right by us, or do I want Major League Baseball here in Sacramento?
But you use the term audition. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're auditioning for something and the director is not paying attention, it doesn't matter if you had the greatest audition of all time. The director is getting popcorn. He's talking to his assistant. He's doing other things. He's not paying attention to what you're doing. And that's what feels like John Fisher is doing. John Fisher doesn't care if there's 14,000 people or 1,000 people there.
But he's not the director to me. The director is Manfred, the next commissioner, and these other owners.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can show, right now, they don't know or care any of this stuff we're talking about.
Correct.
They will go and say, what's the capacity? What are they filling up? What, 7,000? Nah. They don't know any of the context. They don't care. They looking at it like, what are they able to do?
Mm-hmm.
Are they able to show up or not? And we know all that. Like, there have been self-sabotage here with, like, people in Sacramento who have bought these season tickets and put it on the secondary market and outpriced people who are trying
it's
to go.
Crazy.
Like, we know the context to all of this, and all of it is bad. John Fisher is bad. I think about it from a Manfred owners, public, AJ Przinski. AJ Przinski don't really care about what's going on, but if he turns on a A's game and sees it's packed out, it's like, damn, they really support out there.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm worried about. Nobody, just like in Oakland, unfortunately, nobody cared about the context. They would just see, oh, there ain't nobody showing up. Why would they stay there?
Because they're listening to KIFL West Sacramento, KRX QHD2 Sacramento, ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Always free on the Odyssey app. This is a little bit separate because I agree. For Sacramento to be viable is not the word. I think it's viable. To generate some buzz to get ahead of Nashville that has been working behind the scenes for years to get a team.
Yeah.
Salt Lake City, Portland. All these teams are working behind the scenes to try and get teams. If Sacramento is going to leapfrog them, to your point, there has to be, man, they are selling out. Man, that is a rowdy ass crowd. Like, man, people don't like going to Sacramento, not because of the amenities, not because of the mound. They don't like going there because, man, it is a tough place to play because it is sold out and the people are loud and the fans are there. That's, I think, what's going to have to happen.
Right.
It doesn't help, though, that you have players who are sitting there feeding the beast.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah. Because then, I mean, it does, it might not even be the city of Sacramento that's listening to Severino. Because a lot of people in Sacramento are like, oh, whatever. We don't even know who this guy is. Mm-hmm. It's the other Major League Baseball players that are listening and hearing and like the complaints. And at some point, just shut up and do your job.
Right.
Like, 100%. This is a situation. You took the money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't act like you didn't take the money. Mm-hmm. You took the money. You knew where they were playing. Mm-hmm. It's not like anyone surprised you with something.
Right.
Go out there and play baseball.
Yeah.
That's the job.
Yep.
And I mean, he's made it where he's not even tradable.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
And the
contract probably made him not tradable. That's he's expensive.
Well, if you lived up to the contract, if you didn't have like 7 ERA at home, you'd be perfectly fine going and getting a job elsewhere. It's like, all right.
But they also like, and also my outlook on it is like you mentioned, Kyle, trying to leapfrog other cities for expansion. I'm of the belief, as bleak as it may look, until I see differently, money talks, they're going to Vegas. They will find a way to get to Vegas some way or another. This has never been, hey, for me, it's never been, hey, convince John Fisher to keep him here instead of going to Vegas. The money, until I see differently, will talk. They will find a way to get to Vegas.
Yeah.
My thought was, if you did good enough here while the A's were here, like you said, you can leapfrog some of those other teams in a potential expansion conversation, because I think they do want to expand. They just have to get this A's thing taken care of first, and then they want to expand. And I thought this was an opportunity for something like that.
The other thing I want to get to on this is I also don't want to overestimate how many people don't go because of John Fisher specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that number of people is probably extremely small. Mm-hmm. We're like, I'm not going because the number of people here in Sacramento, there's a lot of people in the Bay Area where that's the case.
Right.
But like we were talking about today, I think James hit the nail on the head that the Rivercats being here torpedoes a lot of momentum for the A's.
And it just reduces the value.
Yeah, big time.
It does a little bit, but with all due respect, ain't nobody tripping off the Rivercats. Like,
but
in baseball.
No, it's not. But it's, if I'm going to go to a game with my friends, I'm just going to go to a game. I'm not going to sit there and go like, I got to go to an A's game. Well, I might, but random person who's just like, yeah, me and my friends like to go to the ballpark and drink a beer. They're not as wrapped in. They just know that, hey, there's this many days of baseball. True. And so whether it's Rivercats or A's, if it was just the A's here, that person who's going to go to Rivercats, I don't even know if they're here this weekend, but maybe this weekend, would instead, if the Rivercats weren't here, be like, all right, we want to go to the ballpark. When are the A's here?
Yeah, there's not another major league park where there's 150 games a year. Like, I mean, you can go to a game on any given night. You don't even have to really worry about the schedule. You know that one of the two teams are going to be playing there.
The only reason I push back on that a little bit is because they don't go to the Rivercats game anyway. Like, hasn't been anything for 15 years.
They used to when it was the A's. They sold out every single game.
Absolutely. But since the Giants took over, like, they don't go to Rivercats games.
Yeah. I think a big piece of it is one, all the stuff we talked about earlier where, man, if the A's came out today and said, we're putting Sacramento on our jersey for the rest of the year and the rest of our time, that would be a massive win for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you get people going out to games just because of that.
Yeah.
Like that sure. by itself. And then the other thing it comes down to, and I think this is the case not just in Sacramento, I think this is every market in sports across any sport. The A's being as bad as they've been at home and just 16 games under 500 overall doesn't stoke a lot of excitement across a 162 game season. I don't think it helps that despite with all the negativity that James and I laid out earlier, that, oh, hey, then all these people who paid all this money to go watch them against the Cubs, yeah, they got smoked in the opening game. Yeah, and then you know what? It took them, how many series did it take them to win a home game?
Like three.
Yeah, it was just like, man, this is not a good team. And I think that if they go into next year, and I laid out the scenario, they're 25 and 15, and they're 20 and 5 at home or whatever it is, I think that's where you start to see the momentum really pick up.
Yeah.
They were always set up to be bad. Like, it feels like they were positioned to fail. And starting the season the way that they did was such a... It was so fake. Like, baseball is such a long season. Like, you're living this with the Giants right now, but in a more real competitive way. Like, the...
Competitive.
Well, what I mean is the Giants once looked like a real, they look like a team that was, we're talking playoffs, talking about at least competing for the division. You get into the wild card, you see what you could do. But the season is so long, you can have these runs where you're playing really, really good baseball. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's over. Like, this team stinks. And that's what happened. The A's had a run where it's like, wow, they're more competitive than they have any business to be. And then the season settles in and you go, wow, they're terrible.
Yeah.
They are awful. Now, there are historically bad baseball teams in Major League Baseball right now that drown this out. But between them being bad and all of the scrutiny that they're facing from essentially the entire league. They're stupid ass announcers. They're stupid ass reporters. It's like there was like, we use the word collusion in the NFL a lot. It's like there was collusion to make Sacramento look as stupid as possible. Mm-hmm. They were never in a position to Sacramento, the city, mm-hmm. Vivek, whoever. They were never going to be put in a position for this to work, mm-hmm. which is so bizarre because Rob Manfred is behind this. Like, Rob Manfred is the reason that this
Correct.
Is happening.
Correct.
They can go Fisher all you want to. This is, Manfred could have shut this down and he didn't.
Right. He facilitated it.
And now, what was it, 30 something teams? His other bosses, Manfred's mm-hmm. other bosses are like, no, we're going to make sure that they look as stupid as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, when have you ever heard an announced team trash an opposing city the way that they have Sacramento? In a ballpark, if it's, mm-hmm. when have you ever heard that in any professional sport? Mm-hmm. You don't, because they don't allow it.
Right.
This was greenlit. Mm-hmm. This was like, yeah, go ahead. It was get your stuff off.
Is it? And it was greenlit at the last minute.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like if you would have given them a year to build up and get the park ready, okay,
right.
Maybe you would have something. But mm-hmm. the fact that you just rush this thing, hey, we got to slap up a clubhouse in the outfield, get it up there quick. Oh, look, we can put chairs on top of it. Mm-hmm. Like, they're so far behind, and everything is reactionary. I mean, for me, they don't even embrace some of the things that happen that are because of the park. Like, I think that if, like, when Mark Kotze gets thrown out of a game and has to walk all the way through the outfield,
yeah.
they should embrace it. Yeah. Embrace that entire yeah. thing. But they don't. It's like, oh, the whole crowd gets quiet. It's like, oh, this is awkward. How long is it going to take him to get out there?
Yeah.
No.
And yeah, you guys are right. My thing is, though, if you're a Sacramento sports fan like myself, mm-hmm. like we all are, mm-hmm. the goal still has to be the goal. And all that other, there's only, to me personally, I'm not saying what's right or wrong. Mm-hmm. There's only one thing that should, you know, usually keep you away from that park, and that's finances. Times are hard. Like,
sure.
People are struggling. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to tell anybody that they should do something with their money and all this other stuff. But that would be the thing to keep you away. John Fisher, name on the jersey, marketing to us, that's fine. But all right, cool. The goal is to show people that when there's a professional sport here, mm-hmm. there's 14,000 people in that stadium.
Right.
That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all that other stuff kind of distracts you from what's going on and gives mm-hmm. another reason why not to show up to the park. Even if you have 14,000, you might not be able to get a Major League Baseball team. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that guarantees anything, mm-hmm. but I promise you, if you're putting in 6,000-7,000, there's zero chance of you getting a baseball team.
Sure.
So your best shot is to show up to those games, regardless of who the owner is, regardless of what's going on. And once again, context is important. It's unfair. Mm-hmm. That Sacramento has to put 14,000 in the ballpark when the Rays are in town on a Monday. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody else has to do that in Major League Baseball. That's unfair. That's the context of it all. But this is what you signed up for, and this is what you need to do if you want to try to put your best foot forward to get a Major League franchise.
But what if the alternative is we are learning something and it's the city doesn't want this? Mm-hmm. What if that's what we're learning?
Doesn't want a baseball team, or doesn't want John Fisher's A's?
Doesn't want a baseball team.
Then that's what we learned. That's what they're
like.
Showing.
I think that's a real
yeah.
That's a real conversation.
Yeah, that's a real possibility.
Sure.
And that's what you're showing. As much as we love this city, mm-hmm. and we think it's a big league city. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not to that level. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not sure. a place where. When the Kings and A's play, A's play in a real stadium, mm-hmm. you could get 40,000 in an A's game and 20,000 in a Kings game. Maybe we can't mm-hmm. do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the reality of it, too.
I think a tough thing that we don't really like to acknowledge is something that we've talked about as it pertains to the Monarchs. There's a lot of, like, we look at 49ers, once upon a time, the Oakland Raiders. Giants, once upon a time, the Oakland A's. like there's, you know, we cover the 49ers because there are a lot of 49er fans here. Mm-hmm. We covered the Raiders because, I mean, there's still a lot of Raider mm-hmm. fans here and so on and so forth with the baseball teams, the Giants and all of that. That's because there's a lot of people who commute from Sacramento mm-hmm. to San Francisco or Oakland for any of those sports franchises. You have the A's in a position where you're probably not getting Bay Area people coming down for that. Like,
unless the Giants are in town.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like you couldn't get into, you know, Yankees Giants, but you can get it. I don't know if that actually happened, but you can get into, you know, Yankees A's, right?
Sure.
Like you're making decisions, but from a game to game standpoint, you're probably not getting a lot of those, you know, Bay Area fans here because mm-hmm. of the stigma attached to what sure. the Athletics in Sacramento are, and that hurts you. Like I've talked openly, like, we're never seeing a WNBA team here again.
Right.
Not as long as the Valkyries exist. I was here a part of that organization when they were going to Western Conference Finals, and or not mm-hmm. a part of it, but I was very closely around it. Right. There were a ton of commuters that were season ticket holders for the Sacramento Monarchs that lived in, you know, Fairfield, Vacaville, Vallejo, and mm-hmm. way beyond that, Oakley, mm-hmm. all of these different cities. And it's like, I imagine, you know, to a certain degree, that's the case for the Valkyries as well.
Yeah.
And when you eliminate the ability to pull people in from surrounding areas, that's going to hurt you. On a night-to-night basis, that stuff's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
I wonder if
been operating at a deficit from the moment that they took the field.
I wonder if this offseason they can have a, like, how do we make this work? Number one,
call
win.
Us.
Number one, win.
We got
number
you.
Number two, start selling Sacramento A's merchandise. Like, ingratiate the fans to the product.
It ain't even got to be all your gear. It could be a City Connect version that has Sacramento. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be all the roads.
There's like literally a mandate to not say Sacramento.
Yeah.
Like I told you about T-Mobile Park when I looked at the scoreboard for the first time and saw I think it was San Francisco and L.A. It was such and such and such and such. And then all the way over in the corner, it was A's. I think it might have been San Francisco A's that day. It was like, I don't think it said A's. It said Athletics. It says Athletics. And it was like, oh, wow. I knew that existed, but it was really weird seeing it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's not about us.
Well, then they even call them the West Sacramento A's when they do say Sacramento. They always say West Side. We're here in West Sacramento. People realize how small West Sacramento is. Like it's not
okay,
a big
bitch,
place.
Well, I'm here in Santa Clara now for the 49ers.
I know. I got.
What is it? Is it Arlington? Where's the stadium? Here in Arlington.
Yeah.
Arlington
not
is
that
in
close
Dallas.
To Dallas.
Not even remotely close.
Yeah.
It is a horrible drive to Arlington. Awful.
I did get yelled at on the internet when I said when I was finally in Sacramento to see the big joke was that if I was in Sacramento, the Kings didn't win, so I never got to see the beam lit in person. Uh-huh. Well, I was over at Drake's Barn for my buddy's bachelor party one night. The Kings won. I took a photo. I was like, finally. And multiple people were like, you're in West Sacramento.
Oh, for God's sake.
All right, man. Golly.
People are weird.
Yeah, man.
Hella weird, man.
But no, it would be the Chatty House brought up. I forget who brought it up in the Chatty House, and James brought it up like, if you just sold Sacramento A's merchandise, mm-hmm. like you're fine. Maybe they don't have the copyright for it, or there's not, because that would be peak A's, just not having the copyright for this thing they want to do. But maybe there's some kind of mandate, but like, man, this whole 3-year thing, there's not even concrete poured for that stadium yet.
Yeah, right.
Like this,
there isn't even
year,
a sign that says like, "future home of the A's."
Right, like, brothers, buckle in.
It literally
like,
says
here for a
Tropicana
while.
That way. Right. It's like,
really? Just go around the room. Do you guys think they get to Vegas? I do.
Yeah, I don't think Manfred's going to let them not get there.
Right. That's my thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, at some point, the other owners might be like, "Hey, pal, it's not your decision anymore. We gave you an opportunity to oversee this."
That I think would take years though.
Mm.
I think 50-50.
You know, to Casey's point though, I know there was something else you wanted to, but to Casey's point, I get the idea. It's the city. You got to show up for the city. You got to mm-hmm. like. But I feel like there might be a certain and I don't know, and this is why I try to be careful because I'm not like a paying consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play me. Like you, like I want to, support baseball, but don't play me in the process.
That's it.
And the Athletics, I feel like you're playing me.
Yeah.
I mean, and at this point, maybe the Sacramento Athletics or the Sacramento, maybe you're pandering. That's fine. Pander. That's fine. Pander
at this point.
Don't play me though, because if I start to feel like I've got a grudge against you,
yeah.
Oh man, you go ahead.
And that's where I say though, you're not gonna beat these guys in a money contest. Well, maybe Damian is, but you're not going to beat these guys in a money contest. You've got to play their game.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, Manfred's game. Manfred, no disrespect to anybody,
mm-hmm.
but Oakland A's fans played right into what he was saying. That's exactly what he wanted them to do. He ran down that product, wanted them not to show up. They didn't show up, and he could say, look, I can't make it here. I've got to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't going to beat him that way.
Yeah.
You were going to beat him by showing up, whether it's Sacramento or Oakland, showing mm-hmm. up, showing that it's a viable market mm-hmm. and saying, okay, you're either going to have to like tell the truth about why you're leaving and make it up an excuse, or you're going to have to stay. But you're not going to get this. I learned this from the Sonics. That's what Clay Bennett did in Seattle. That's where I learned it. They were like, oh, well, we're just going to stop showing up, and that's going to make him sell. You ain't going to make these people sell. They're not going to sell. What?
Clay Bennett bought the team with the full notion to move it.
Yeah, and I can.
Go ahead.
I think it's important to note the A's used to draw like $3 million a year.
Yeah.
They used to draw like crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
The city and the A's had a deal on this insane $12.5 billion project that the A's insisted on. Mm-hmm. They were within millions of dollars. And then the A's went, we're done, and left.
Yeah.
To go build a stadium where all of a sudden they don't need all this infrastructure. Mm. And the city of Oakland has said, if all they needed was a stadium, that thing would have been up in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
But they insisted on all this housing and hotels and this shopping district and all this extra billions of dollars in infrastructure.
Oakland A's city.
Yes. They were trying to take Howard Terminal and completely redo it. And it was going to change how they had to do BART and all these roads they were going to have to do. And there was all these external costs. And then when they got within shouting distance of like, hey, we're on the cusp, the A's went, hey, we're going to actually go to Vegas. We're done with this now.
Well, that, and they do other things like throughout the process. So like when they had the reverse boycott where everyone shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
They held back a bunch of tickets to make it look like the stadium was less empty. And then release them at the last second. Say, you guys really didn't sell it. Because this is straight up out of the Maloof's playbook. Like, the Here We Stay nights. The first Here We Stay night raised enough money to buy 4,000 tickets.
Damn.
To sell out the arena.
Yeah.
Right? 4,000 tickets. And then donated the tickets to all the Boys and Girls Clubs, all this stuff to sell tickets, right? To fill up the arena, to make it. Maloof's held back like 3,000 tickets still. And released him at the last second, so the stadium looked mostly empty still. But and it was just dirty play. He's done the same thing.
Can I say something that's really unpopular, and I'm so sorry to those involved in this?
Get ready to end the show, Jesse.
That stuff didn't matter. The Here We Stay stuff didn't matter. It didn't matter if you sold out every game. That was never, ever, ever what mattered. What mattered was Kevin Johnson proving to David Stern that they had the money to sell those, one, to build the arena, but more importantly, to sell those brand new high-end suites to massive corporations for a minimum of 10 years. That's what Kevin had to prove. If fans showed up, like, fans were always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But that was never the thing. It was, is there enough money, big, big money, to show that this team is sustainable in this city? As much as people love the I pay your salary thing, buddy, you don't.
Sure.
And that was never, that David Stern never said, wow, there's 17,000 at Arco Arena tonight. Never said that. He said, hey, Kev, how many boxes are up there? How many do you have committed to sell? Like, with real money in hand, how many do you have committed to sell? Because if you can get to this number, we'll call this whole thing off and I'll make sure it happens.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what happened.
I agree, but I'm going to say in the court of public opinion and around the league, the fact that fans showed up and did have those moments, it kept Sacramento as a viable option. Like where a lot of places like Oakland goes down to 3,000 fans. People watch SportsCenter, you're like, that dude just hit a home run and there's no one even running to go get the ball because yeah. there's no one in that section mm-hmm. of the outfield. That wasn't the case in Sacramento. The right. groundswell, it does matter, especially with the ability for social media at that point to carry the message. And I know mm-hmm. it's not the end-all, be-all, but it is part of the equation.
I feel like it was a footnote then.
Yeah, that's fine. It's still it's a footnote, but the fact that you have a vibrant fan base.
But I hear you. I just feel like the fan base was always vibrant.
Oh, of course it was.
Like and I don't know.
Dead.
Yeah, like yeah. it was getting murdered. Like that's essentially what was happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fan base was getting murdered, and they needed Michael Jackson's Thriller to bring us back to life.
Yeah.
Like that's what they needed, yeah. and
a motorhome.
We needed someone.
Thriller and a motorhome.
Is a motorhome the same as an RV?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Shout out to the motorhome RV.
How many suites did Kenny?
And thank you to Dave for saving us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Shout out to Dave.
He's not dead. You don't have to do this. Like, Dave's not dead. He's 50. He's not dead.
Let me shout him out this one.
How many of the suites that they sold did you buy, Kenny?
Great question.
None. Yeah.
None.
Have you been to a sporting event this week?
Yes.
Were you in a suite?
Yeah, I was in a suite.
No, it's right. It's fine.
Oh, my
God. It's fine.
What does that have to do with anything?
The crazy part was we were in a meeting, like a late-ass meeting. And I go to the house, and I'm like, oh, man, how relaxing. And I open my phone, and it's like, Casey's,
where are you? Is it or not on the way home for me? It's on the way home.
That's
correct.
I assume you're at the A's game?
Yes.
So that's really sick, though, that you can just pull up into your suite at any time.
Well, I can't do that anytime. It's not my suite.
I think he can just drive up to the suite.
Right? He's on the concourse.
Get out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mr. Caraway, please have a seat. Your steak and grilled salmon is on the way because he gets two entrees.
SR Prime comes down and actually cooks for him.
I wasn't even on the side of where the Sky River Saloon is. It was a one-time situation, which is why I took advantage of it. I said, hey, honey, I need to stop by the ballpark real quick. I was like, yo, I have to do this. I even broke my. I said I'll be leaving early. I usually don't leave baseball games mm-hmm. early. I left at like the fifth inning. Wasn't happy about that.
Nah,
but I had to do what I had to do.
Yeah,
no, I had to get home.
So it's your fault that Sacramento's not going to get a baseball team.
Well, there it is.
Sorry, guys.
Like, did you guys see Kenny leave early? He bought all the suites and he's leaving early.
I was there in time for the photo ops, though. It don't matter when I leave. When Chris Biederman takes his photo, I was there. So it looks like. He didn't take that photo in the eighth inning.
You don't have to rationalize your richness, bro. It's
what do you got? You don't have to rationalize your richness. It's got to be a T-shirt.
Yes.
What do you guys got coming up?
James at 3:00. We got to talk about something.
Mm. Mm.
We got to talk about something. I read from Bobby about the salary cap for next year.
Oh,
Bobby Marks. I think it's interesting. Kenny and I are going to talk about it. Bobby said that a third of the team, now, I don't know the amount, but a third of teams in the NBA are going to have cap space next year.
Oh, okay.
And that might be based off Bobby's projection, salary cap stuff that doesn't line up with what happened this year. But I want to ask you, how much does that change current situations with restricted free agents and potential trade markets for big money players? So we'll do that. Jesse asked a really good Kings question, too. In the rundown about, like, we've talked about this team, like, trying to establish stability.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we haven't talked about is maintaining stability. Mm. And if this team goes into the season with a certain, hey, we here, as Sean says, if we go in with a here we stay mentality, what could break it? And how quickly?
Mm.
So we'll talk a little bit about that stuff, man. We have a lot of football stuff we want to get to as well regarding the 49ers.
Boy, two or three receivers. Jacob Cowan's back, though.
Celebration.
That's my boy. Oh, my God.
I was listening to Candlestick Chronicles on my walk this morning. And
good show.
Great show. lots of questions about really that receiver tough. Position right now. Lots of questions.
Juwan Jennings in a second for Tyreek Hill.
Call
a sixth. I saw that earlier.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. We'll hash this out on D'Lo and KC. We're the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Shout out to Joe Brazil. Until tomorrow at 10 a.m., drink water. Be nice to people.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts.